Love Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to another hour of Foul Territory here on Blog Talk Radio, hosted by none other than BackSportsPage.com. It's your host, Asa Beal. I'm going to be joined a little bit later by Carson Phillips Spots, my co-host. Welcome, guys, to a very special Valentine's Day edition of Foul Territory. It's February 13th, February in some parts of the country. It's already 43 days into the new year. I don't know how the hell that happened. But we're here, and you know what? It's time for baseball, ladies and gentlemen. Louis C.K. wants to name his child, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so excited. Spring training has sprung. That's what I'm trying to say. Spring training has sprung. The pitchers and the battery mates, the catchers, they've reported. You know that it's time for baseball, and that is so exciting to me. It's exciting to Carson, who's going to be joining me a little bit later to talk. And I know it's exciting to all you baseball fans out there. Football has ended. Basketball continues, and hockey's even back. But all of you people who are true fans of Foul Territory are real excited for the baseball season to get cranked up. So we're going to talk a lot of baseball. We might have a little bit of football later on. We might get to some of the prospects for the combine and guys that are going to the NFL draft and what to expect over the next few weeks as their pro days get cranked up in preparation for the draft. But baseball, the diamond, the perfect game. I think they call soccer the beautiful game, and someone tried to coin the perfect game for baseball, which sounds weird because you can have a perfect game in baseball. So I'm not going to call it that, but it's still America's pastime, and I'm going to get right into it right now. The Atlanta Braves are the primary subject of today's first part of today's discussion. And, you know, our bosses over at Back Sports Page just demanded. They called me up. They sent letters to my door. They flew through the letters flew through the fireplace like in Harry Potter, just demanding more coverage of the Atlanta Braves. They could not be sated. So we are going to fulfill that, and we're going to give you a lot of Braves talk. We're going to talk about what you can expect at certain positions that aren't the ones that are really touted right now. Obviously, the outfield is what everyone's talking about, but we'll talk to you a little bit about the infield for the Braves, as well as some of their bullpen battles and rotation battles. Then we're going to get into some fantasy news, but let's get to the Braves. And this is a team at an interesting place. They have been knocking on the door the last few years after a pretty rough patch. They nominally got to the playoffs last year. I don't want to call it the playoffs. They got to the play-in game. But prove that, they have the talent to be a yearly playoff team. Right now, they have a talent foundation in terms of young position players, in terms of starting pitching, although not as strong as it once was. They've set themselves up for a long time, just a lot of success in this NL East. And the Washington Nationals are good as hell, and I don't want to undersell that at all. If I'm just speaking with my brain, I'll tell you that the Nationals are better than the Braves. and the Nationals are the team that is more likely to win the NL East next year. Do I think that means that the Braves can't win it? Not at all. I think they definitely can, and they have to believe that they can, but I think it's up to the Braves to chase the Nationals. I think the Nationals are going to be really setting the tone in that division with their starting pitching and, you know, with a just a well-rounded roster. The Braves have been lauded the last few years, the last few off-seasons, for entering the season with an abundance of starting pitching depth. And they haven't had that top-of-the-line starter for a while now. I can't remember the last time the Braves had a guy who was a top 10 starter in the league. It probably hasn't been since Glavine in the early 2000s. You know, you could make the case that Chris Medlin was that in the second half, but nobody's buying that. You have to do a full season. But depth is what everyone talks about, and depth is very important. Almost every team uses 7, maybe 8 starters throughout the course of the year. Pitchers are very difficult to keep healthy. The human arm is not made to throw a fastball, but what the Braves have had is the ability to plug in a guy, maybe a AAA guy, maybe a veteran guy, who has come in and delivered just great performances, you know, in light of injuries. This year, maybe not quite as much depth. Do I hear Carson? Have you joined us, Carson?
Yeah, I'm on, Ace. So thanks for having me, and you know, I feel you start off the show with some tantalizing subject matter. I just want to let you go ahead and get your points across.
Yeah, you know, I teased the people that you would be on. I don't think they knew that they would be getting their surprise quite this soon, but they did.
It is. It's Valentine's Day come early.
Yeah, and it's the 13th. It's already so far into the new year, and Valentine's Day is tomorrow. And I'm next to positive that the person I'm hanging out with on Valentine's Day isn't listening to this. So I can speak freely about all the things that I have planned already. But what a weird holiday, right?
It is. It is a weird holiday, and I'm sure it has some archaic significance back in the pagan times. We celebrate it here with romance and chocolate, so definitely a fun holiday. Always good to be, you know, in the Valentine's spirit, I guess. But
as long as it coincides with pitchers and catchers reporting, I don't care. You know,
I guess it, you know, might have to do with the love between the pitchers and the catchers. So you never know.
They're battery mates, and one pitches and one catches. You can't ignore that combination. Can't ignore that connection.
Yeah, not one bit. But yeah, like you said, baseball season's upon us, and I'm pretty pumped about it, man.
Yeah. Well, since you're here, I was gonna get right into it, and I did a little bit. But since you're here, let's give the people our favorite segment, the most playful segment in all of foul territory, and I'm talking about Tweet Child. Oh my.
Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest sky as this day thought of rain.
Thank you, Tommy. That was most enlightening and most enjoyful. I'm going to go ahead and give you my Rob Delaney tweet of the week, because that's what it's now morphed into. And he said, "My mom always used to give me a card on Valentine's Day when I was a kid. She stopped doing it when we broke up."
I like that. Yeah. Couldn't, you know, off the top, it sounds pretty standard, but you know, that's a classic Delaney tweet. I like it.
Yeah, you know, a little weird humor to really bring some light to a holiday that people take way too seriously.
It is. I have one. It's not comical, but it is a person that's dear to my heart. Now we're talking about Valentine's Day. A tweet from young Jermaine Cole. You might know him as J. Cole. He tweeted, "Don't call it a mixtape. It's not a preview of the album either. Woke up today and wanted to share these. I'm not trying to put across any sort of comical or sports related tweet. This is just good music. Check out J. Cole's new EP at dreamvillain.net. It's a series of five songs he put out. I guess his album's coming out sometime soon. I listened to the songs, really enjoyed it. So that was my tweet of the week. J. Cole letting his fans get some free music early.
Excellent job. Was that dreamvillain.net?
Yeah, so it's dreams, so D-R-E-A-N.
Cool URL.
And villain, V-I-L-L-A-I-N.net. It's kind of like a blog that J. Cole runs. It has pretty interesting stuff on there.
Huh.
But yeah, he released the songs for download. Five of them, great songs, played them through a couple times yesterday and today. Definitely excited for what the album has in store for us all.
Wow, okay. Well, everybody get on that, J. Cole, now a part of Jay-Z's empire, if I'm not mistaken. We'll be dropping those tunes. And let's get to the diamond. Let's get right into it. I teased the people a little bit talking about some Braves stuff. And what I was talking about concerning the Braves is their rotation. And, we're going to get to the Upton brothers. That's super exciting. I mean, that's thrilling that to bring on two guys of that caliber. But everybody knows pitching is what gets you to the playoffs. And like I said, the Braves enter this season with some depth, but not as much as they've been credited with in years past. Obviously, they gave up Randall Delgado in the Justin Upton trade, which was a necessary evil. A guy who's proved that he kind of knows what he's doing at the big league level, got roughed up a little bit, but a guy that, I expect to develop into a solid number three, number four type starter. But any discussion of the Braves pitching staff has to start with Tim Hudson, who at this point is easily one of my favorite Braves. And I don't know. I mean, I feel like this guy has been on the Braves for years and years. I guess it's only been about five, but I feel like he's been a Brave for life, Carson.
Yeah. He's definitely a guy that,
oh wait, I said five. It's been 8 years. Okay. Geez. That makes more sense.
Jeez. Yeah. Definitely a guy, that you'd like to see play and sort of grow and develop. Like you said, the trade definitely changed the face of things and starting to sort of see the 2013 come into form. I just want to ask you sort of a general question about our rotation coming into this year. I know last year a lot of guys were moving parts, sort of seeing how guys would sort of grow and develop. Definitely didn't quite see Chris Mellon taking the role that he's taken so far, or that he took, last year. Towards the last half of the season, what do you see the Braves sort of the identity of the rotation as we move into the 2013 season? My main concern is, is Chris Medlin a number one starter? And if so, can he really bear the burden, like you talked about earlier, physically of pitching, every fifth day for the length of the season?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I don't know. I've never been in a major league locker room. I don't know how much it matters who's the number one starter, who's the number two. I imagine it matters to a decent degree. I mean, these are prideful guys. The guy with, excuse me, missed my cough button there. The guy with the demeanor of the ace, who's been the Braves guy, is obviously Tim Hudson. But what you're referring to is really who's going to be the best pitcher. And Chris Medlin was unbelievable last year. I mean, I did not see that coming. I thought he was going to be good, and I really did think he could start. But to see him do what he did to the tune of a 1.57 ERA over 12 starts, he was 10-1, 120 strikeouts to 23 walks. That's
wow.
A 5.22 strikeout to walk ratio. That is up there with the Cliff Lees, with the Roy Halladays. That is an unstoppable strikeout to walk ratio. And as a starting pitcher, the way that you become dominant is you control the three true outcomes. This is what sabermetric teachings have taught me. I totally buy into it. The three true outcomes are plays that eliminate any doubt on what's going to happen. These three true outcome plays are the strikeout, the walk, and the outside the park home run. Strikeout, walk, home run are the three true outcomes. As a pitcher, if you dominate those categories, you're going to be very successful. Chris Medlin gave up only 6 home runs. That was only 0.4 per nine, which is an unbelievable rate. You know, and on top of that, he got a bunch of ground balls, and he only allowed 6.7 hits per nine innings, which also is unbelievable. So he's going to regress from those numbers, but Carson, I do believe he will be the best Braves starter. I do believe he will pitch to an ERA somewhere in the 2.8 to 3 range. I really think he can do that. The innings are a question, though, because he threw 138 last year, obviously missed an entire year recovering, and in 2010 he had thrown 107. So he hasn't built up to 200, certainly not. And the Braves will definitely have to take a little easy on him, but look for the Braves to manage it better than the Nationals did. We know they already did that, bringing him back. But I would imagine if he went 138, he should be able to get close to 200, maybe at the 175 plateau. And at that point, that's a lot of innings, assuming he holds up over the full season.
That's pretty interesting, too, Ace, when you talk about sort of Chris Medlin coming off injury, sort of the height. I mean, obviously, you know, when you look at the, you know, Chris Medlin versus Steven Strasburg coming out of college, you know, definitely not the same height surrounding the two guys. But it's kind of interesting to see both guys coming off of injury, the way that the team sort of worked them back into the starting rotation. I know, you know, Strasburg had the innings limit, whereas sort of Chris Medlin didn't really know if he'd ever regain his starting form. So I guess that's kind of cool to look at both of those guys coming off of injury, you know, hoping to lead their teams you know, to the NL East crown.
Yeah, it certainly is. And two guys that could not be more different as just physically and, as you know, as well as the way they pitch and their stuff. And, I mean, it's kind of unfair to compare them. You know, I mean, I think everybody in the world knows that Steven Strasburg is better than Chris Medlin and has the chance to be the best pitcher on earth. But you can't underrate pitching savvy and just intelligence. And we saw that with the Braves pitching staff. John Smoltz had dominating stuff at the top of his game. But Greg Maddux and even Tom Glavine relied so much on the head game on the mound and just outthinking hitters, putting the ball in places that they had set up 2 at-bats earlier and getting the guy to weakly ground out. And it wasn't accidental. It was all set up. And Chris Medlin is that type of talent. We've heard those comparisons, and he's not he's not on their level yet, not even close. But I think he has the ability to pitch and pitch just with that precise control, and we've never seen it waver. That's the thing. He proves that he's a guy who is only going to walk 1 to 2 guys per 9 innings. He's going to be able to get by. He proved that he can strike guys out even though he doesn't have a blow-by fastball. So I hope the Braves sign him to a long-term extension. I think if he – it's not a very Braves-like move, but if he has a really good year this year, I could see it happening. Let's talk about some of the other young guys. So Hudson and Medlin, we can definitely pencil in at the top of the rotation. I think Mahalam definitely gets a spot based on his solid performance for the Braves last year. So that's 3 taken care of. Now the guys who right now are slotted in at 4 and 5 are Mike Minor, former first-round pick, former Vanderbilt Commodore, and Julio Teheran of Columbia. We saw what Mike Minor could do a little bit in the second half last year. He really turned it on. The question mark is Teheran. Now, he was touted as the Braves' best prospect a couple years ago. He had a phenomenal season 2 years ago. But then last year had an ERA over 5 in AAA. Carson, I mean, do you think he could win a spot in the rotation with a big spring?
Yeah, Asa, I think was the biggest question coming in to the season in terms of, you know, the guys we had on our rotation. Is that I thought we had enough guys last year who sort of moved between the big leagues, the show and the minor leagues down in Gwinnett, getting quality starts, getting quality reps down there, so that we're flexible in the way that we call guys up and utilize guys in certain rotation spots if guys need to take a rest or if they were hurt. Julio Teheran, last year in limited action, he didn't play that well. So that's what's sort of surprising the most with getting rid of Delgado was that Delgado was a guy who you could also, insert in that rotation. Even if it wasn't a guy that you'd have from start to finish in the rotation, this guy you can start in, in case of injury or frustrating matchup. But, Julio's definitely going to have to grow up fast. He's going to become, an everyday starter in this league. Very, interesting to see how he develops and hopefully, he can, some big league around knowing that this one, to get things done. But hopefully, like I said, he can calm down and be a solid guy for us in the rotation.
Yeah, and I'm really excited. The film of him that I saw and that I watched him pitch in AAA, he looked the reason they traded Delgado is because Tehran has the ceiling. Delgado might even have a higher floor than Tehran, meaning that he's guaranteed, barring injury, really, to be at least a serviceable starter. Tehran has the upside of a number one or number two starter. And though he's slight in stature, reminding a lot of people of none other than Pedro Martinez.
Pedro.
He can generate that power, just like Pedro. And a contact of a writer that I read recently told him that Tehran tore up the Dominican Winter League this year. He threw very well toward the end of the season and in winter ball, and he made some needed adjustments. Apparently, he had some struggles last year. They were partly mechanical, partly had some issues with repeating his delivery. When he would get tired, it'd be very hard for him to locate his fastball. Just had problems with fastball command in general, and that's very important. You have to be able to establish the fastball, especially if you have one that good. If you can't aim it, you can't put the fastball in the zone. Nobody's going to respect your off-speed pitches if you can't put the fastball over. So that's obviously a building block of any pitcher's game is mastering fastball command. And assuming Tehran can do that, if he can correct his mechanics, which, the Braves have a great development staff and coaching staff in place, especially on the pitching side, if he can correct his mechanics, if he can get his mind right, just get focused and get confident, I think he has, everything it takes. He throws a fastball in the 95 to 96 mile per hour range. When he can locate it, it's got a little movement. It's got a little skirt to it. And then he has two secondary pitches that they're trying to develop, the changeup and the curveball. Now, I think maybe some of these problems stemmed with the Braves, I don't want to say jerking him around because that's not accurate, but they're asking him to do a lot of stuff. And, he was a very young kid at AAA, even after he repeated it last year. He was one of the younger pitchers in all AAA. But they were trying to get him to develop the curveball, then the changeup, and, do both simultaneously. That's challenging. They're both obviously very challenging pitches to master. So maybe he can focus on one over the other. But I hope he comes out and throws a good spring. I would love to see him start the year in the rotation.
Yeah, Asa, like you said, I think that's awesome news, too, that he played well in the Dominican League because that's just more experience he can get before spring training against some pro bats. So, like I said, a little bit that I saw from last year, I think that, just getting more experience and sort of game time situations against other professionals will definitely help him a lot in growing and developing to be the guy that we all think he can be.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. So just a brief note on Minor, because we are spending a lot of time on the Braves here. What Meyer earned his spot this year with 2 months. I'm looking at his monthly splits right now over on baseballreference.com, one of the top two websites of all time. And after a really rough first half, I mean, he got knocked around to the tune of a 5.97 ERA in the first half. He walked more than half of the guys that he struck out. That's never good. A whip of 1.4. And allowed 19 home runs in the first half.
Jeez.
He really righted the ship. We talked about this on previous baseball season episodes of Foul Territory, probably in the 5 or 6 range if you're scrolling through the archives. But we talked about it back then. I'll talk about it now. He changed his approach a little bit. He, got a little happy with the slider and really took major league hitters for the ride with that slider that he had. And what happened was that in July, his strikeouts per inning jumped all the way up to 8.6, almost a strikeout per inning. And that's an incredible rate, ladies and gentlemen. Then something happened in August. It fell all the way to 4.8. But then in September and October, he went 4-0 with a 0.87 ERA and an 8.1 strikeout per nine. So, you know, it, like I said, three true outcomes. It's no surprise that when you have those, gaudy strikeout totals, especially when you combine them with limiting the walks, it produces great results. And, you know, Minor, he saw what success was. And I'm just hoping he's a guy who's come across as a little jerky at times, right? I mean, he came out, I think it was before this past season, and said something like, if he wasn't in the rotation to start the year, he wanted to be traded. It was misconstrued, but isn't that like, didn't he say something like that?
Yeah, I definitely remember hearing him say something along those lines. And I mean, I guess it, you know, it just sort of comes with the territory. If you look at a guy that was just so highly touted coming out of college, he's out of Vanderbilt, it sort of shows in his play, it's sort of the up and down, how his season went last year. Might have some things to work out in terms of mentally, in terms of, you know, dealing with a little bit after being such a highly touted guy. But, like you said, Asa, with Chipper gone and now, trading for the Upton brothers, Chris Mellon coming on straight, I think it's going to be a new look team and, guys have to step up in four different roles. So hopefully Mike Minor can sort of get it together and ride the ship like he did towards the end of last season.
Yeah, absolutely. And if Teron doesn't lock down that rotation spot, or if anybody does, I don't know whose job's secure, whose isn't, a guy that's waiting in the wings might be Sean Gilmartin, who the Braves picked just a couple years ago out of Florida State. A guy seen as a pretty typical college pitcher, a guy without a lot of, dominating upside, but a safe pick that the Braves like to make, those signability picks. Thanks a lot, Liberty Media Corp. What if I wanted – I mean, it doesn't matter. We got young athletic skill position players now, but I say skill positions like football. I think of skill positions as like the tough defensive positions, you know?
Yeah.
Like I think of catcher, shortstop, center, maybe another outfield. I don't know.
I like that. You gotta bring that to the – to the media world.
Yeah, I'm doing it. I'm crossing over sports, like sports. I'd love to do that.
I'm going to compare a golfer to an Olympic trampoliner.
Play a center field out there at Reed,
Dude, is it just me or have the Sports Center anchors just gotten so bad? They used to have some cool dudes back in the day. I mean, when Van Pelt was doing it and Anderson, like that. The big goofy tall white man combo, like that was good. Man, there's some jokers on there.
Yeah, it was. And I guess a lot of times when you get good at Sports Center, you find out your other talents, like you just give you a radio show, so you don't have to do that too much.
Yeah, that's true. And I do like SDP and Russillo. Okay.
Well, I had one more question about the Braves team moving forward.
Yeah.
And I know that we speculated on the eve of the Upton trade, or maybe it's a couple of days before, for what that trade would potentially mean for our team moving forward. And then you just sort of close the door on, you know, any chance of us re-signing Michael Bourne. Any initial thoughts on Michael Bourne's fit in, you know, the Cleveland organization, and B, you know, the contract he got? Was that what you expected? Was it, you know, higher? Was it lower because of the Upton deal? Or, like, what were your initial thoughts on the signing of, of Michael Bourne?
Well, first of all, congrats to Mike B, because, I mean, he's a beast, and I enjoyed his year and a half as a Brave. First of all, for the Indians, it's great, and they have a pretty stacked team right now on the offensive side of the ball. Don't get me wrong. Their pitching staff is a mess. It's in shambles, and they're not going to win anything with that pitching staff, but the offense right now looks real good. I'm just going to go around the depth chart right now. The signing of Bourne means that Drew Stubbs is out of a job, or he's going to share time with Michael Brantley, or one of them's just going to move to DH. Because they could move Swisher to DH or Swisher to first and Reynolds to DH, and then they have a great defensive outfield. But they got Brantley and Stubbs, two guys in the outfield. Brantley is a guy who's shown some good contact potential, not a ton of power, but, you know, a good fielder. Drew Stubbs is a guy who they traded Shin-Soo Chu for to Cincinnati. Stubbs has got some power, got some speed, can't make contact. And then they brought in Swisher. Then they got Mark Reynolds, big power, no contact at first, or DH. Jason Kipnis, one of the hot young second basemen in this league, who I pimped out of my fantasy team this year. Yeah, was a sixth-round pick. As Drubal Cabrera, one of the best-hitting shortstops in all of baseball. Carlos Santana, a thumper behind the plate, who's great at drawing walks. Dude has a close to 400 on base percentage every year, and he's a pretty solid defensive catcher as well. And then young Lonnie Chisenhall over at third with a lot of power potential. So real legit lineup. And so good for them. And the Tigers definitely, you know, I think everyone's going to expect them again to run away with the division, even though they didn't last year. But for Michael Bourne, the fact that he hadn't signed till this point makes me not super surprised at the dollar amount. Although it's not a huge difference from BJ's. If you really look at it, we're paying BJ an average of 15 a year. They're paying Bourne an average of 12 a year, which is a little bit of a difference, but in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter that much. You can still get a fifth year on the deal with a vesting option. So if he has 550 plate appearances the last year of the deal, he automatically gets another year for the same. So it could go up to 560. So it's a little bit of money. I don't think, I think he's still probably happy with it, although maybe it's embarrassing or something to him that he didn't get signed. I don't know what, because he definitely was ready. He didn't even want to wait for the Mets to try their draft pick bullshit. But good sign for the Indians at that price. And, you know, it does, I think it makes us look a little bad just because the dollar figures look pretty discrepant. I don't think that's a word, but there's a discrepancy, so they can be discrepant. Because, you know, BJ has the chance, you know, there's a good chance that Michael Bourne outplayed BJ Upton over the course of that contract. Even with the age difference, I could totally see it happening. And in that case, BJ is going to look like a pretty big overpay. But the other thing is, there's intangible aspects to that too, because he probably made Justin more excited to come, makes it a potentially better environment for him. We were trying to bring Justin in anyways, so then we figured, okay, it'll have a good effect on BJ too. And we knew we wanted to fill a hole in the outfield. We pegged BJ as our top priority at the beginning of the offseason, which I like how the Braves do that. They're very honest about it. They're not like the Blue Jays making secretive moves, although the Blue Jays had a great offseason. But, you know, they just told BJ, they're like, you're our top priority, we're signing you, and that's why they had to give him top dollar. But,
that's awesome, you know, analysis, and, you know, good to know that it was, you know, wasn't too, you know, far off for us. And like you said, awesome that Michael Bourne is getting paid, and hopefully he can help that team take the next step.
Yeah, I'm glad he's not in. I'm glad he's not in the Mets. I don't want to have to face him. You know?
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. But let me ask you one quick question.
Yeah.
I'm coming off the top here, and I don't want you to be taken aback. But I'm looking at The World Baseball Classic starts here in about a month. And I'm looking at the rosters that were released about a month ago. I know that there's some changes on the U.S. team. I know, Joe Gonzalez just accepted to play in pitch for us, the United States team. But just looking at the roster and sort of participation for different countries, in the U.S., I guess specifically it was looking like Mark Scher, Brandon Phillips, Jimmy Rollins, and David Wright at their ace and then at center. At catcher, either Joe Mauer or Jonathan McCroy. I want to compare that with the DR right now and what they got going on. They got Miguel Olivoit at catcher, and the infield is Robinson Cano, Edwin Encarnacion, Miguel Tejada, Jose Reyes, Adrian Beltre, also with Eric Ibar and Hanley Ramirez. Which one do you take right now?
I'm trying to find the rosters. I can't myself, but based on what you told me, the Dominican infield sounds better, for sure.
Sounds a little bit like the Miami Marlins this year.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And Beltre, dude, he might be the best one of all those guys you even listed. He is so dirty. Even he's probably 35 now, but he's better than ever. And he's an animal in defense, and then he just rips the ball. That's a good team. I'm glad Miguel Tejada is still playing, suiting up for that.
Still kicking. Yeah,
he's retired.
I kind of wonder why, where they'll put him.
Huh?
I said I'm kind of wondering, where they'll put him on that infield.
Yeah, that's a good question. He probably will play some third base coach, but
yeah, seriously.
But he can swing that arm around real fast, real fast. And some of those games are here in sunny, AKA cloudy San Francisco, and I might try to hop on that if my schedule allows, because all of a sudden I don't have so much free time. I got a job, ladies and gentlemen. Just want to announce that to all the many thousands out there, and thank you for all your Twitter congratulations.
Yeah.
They meant a lot. They meant a lot. If I had actually got one, it would have been my tweet of the week, but I didn't.
Too many to just take one out. I know how to feel.
I know. Let's talk about the bullpen a little bit. I want to get to that offense because that's the exciting part, the most exciting part. The bullpen, not a whole lot's going to change. Craig Kimbrell is the man in the ninth. He's the best closer in baseball, and I don't see any reason he won't continue his dominance. He is a guy who, there's no really to talk about him a lot, but I want to qualify that statement because it's easy to say a guy's got to be good who has been good. But look at how he succeeds. Look at how he excels. He is a guy who simply overpowers hitters with his stuff. Even when you know the fastball's coming, you still have a very low chance of catching up with it. And if you catch up with it, you have such a low chance of squaring it up that when you combine that with the slider, which he's been able to command so well, he hung like two all year. The batters have no recourse. You can't sit on a pitch. I mean, you have to sit on a pitch. So, I don't know. I don't even know what I'm saying. But
that's what embodies, what he does as a pitcher. You don't know what you're doing when you come back. It's just sort of hard to put in words the things that he's able to do.
Yeah.
I think it's cool is to look at, well, not cool for the Yankees, that organization, but, Mo Rivera going down with an injury, he's been going to be one of the most dominant, relievers in the game for some time, for, more than a decade. And now, sort of, he's come off injury, not really knowing how to play next year. The tide has just turned, and then, we have the new sort of best closer, most dominant closer in baseball here in Atlanta.
Yeah, I do. I mean, Rivera's still going to come back and be incredible. Don't get me wrong, but I think he's going to retire in a couple years anyway. So Kimbrell is a little similar to Rivera. He's different. He's like, there's a Venn diagram and half of them overlap because Rivera is a one pitch guy, which is the craziest thing of all time. He has the cutter. Everybody knows about it. Everybody knows he's going to throw it. It only breaks a couple inches, but it just crushes your bat. Late movement. And so Kimbrel has two pitches, and neither of them are as good as the cutter, but both of them are so good that he has a similar effect. And basically, the slider, if you're looking fastball, you're done. You're absolutely done no matter what. Because as long as he doesn't hang it way up high, it, even if it's not a strike and it's low, it looks like a strike if you're looking fastball, and you're done. He's got a very sound delivery, sturdy mechanics. He comes out of the stretch to generate that power. Imagine how hard he could throw if he came out of the windup. Jesus.
That's a good point.
So excited about him. So excited. And so backing him up as the setup men, we got Eric O'Flaherty and Johnny Venters. Venters a little bit of a down year last year. O'Flaherty picked up the slack, but they both have been dominant for stretches in their career. Both lefties, but you know, they can get righties out. They're not matchup guys. They can go against anybody. The newly acquired Jordan Walden in the Tommy Hansen deal. That's right. No more Ginger Giant. I guess we should have said something about that when we were talking about the rotation. So rest in peace, Tommy Hansen as Brave. I thought he had so much potential. And he did have so much potential, but his delivery is that of a retarded emu. So, sorry. But Jordan Walden, he's fun. He throws hard. He's a right-hander. So I don't know if he automatically has a spot in the bullpen or if he's going to have to earn one, because we certainly have some depth. What about your boy Christian? Christian. What about your boy Christian Martinez?
Yeah, definitely looking, you know, forward to see him. Christian with the TH, you know, had some stints last year and in sort of middle relief. But I think, you know, he just sort of filled some gaps left by injuries. But I am excited to see, you know, what he can do this year, especially now that, you know, we have guys coming back. And have more of a set role. But hey, so let me ask you about your boy Johnny Venters. What's his deal?
Well, he's definitely dealing with some injuries, and that should be acknowledged. I mean, I think part of it was the league just catching up with him, and that happens. And relievers are often able to be dominant for a couple years in a row because they only throw maybe, you know, 40, 50 innings, and not a ton of guys have a beat on them. And even if they do, so much easier if you're at an advantage as a reliever coming into a game to pitch to batters who've been hitting off a different pitcher, because you're totally changing the tune on them and you're specialized against them. But last year, you know, he did struggle, although he still struck a lot of guys out. He had a 3.22 ERA, struck out 10.5 per nine, which,
jeez,
that's pretty ridiculous. It's not on the level of Kimbrel's like 15 per nine. But you know, that's pretty legit. But I think with the slider, he's got to work on the command of the slider, because last year he just couldn't seem to get it. He would either put it way high and up in the left-handed batter's box, or high and, you know, getting crushed, or it would just be way in the dirt, way, you know, like behind the right-handed batter, almost like curving past his feet. So he's got to learn how to do that. I think the fastball was okay. He just didn't have as good a command all around. But he really should, you know, he doesn't need to throw the slider a lot, but he's got to get the command right. The fastball, though, I think between his four-seamer and his two-seamer, you know, or the sinker, really, it's a sinker, the four-seamer and the sinker, there's just so much there to mix fastballs. You know, if you're that good of a reliever with that velocity, if you're mixing those two pitches, sometimes that can be enough. So, you know, I look for the Braves staff to really put him right and kind of get him focused. I don't know if it's a mental thing or if he is recovering physically or what. He definitely in May got shit on. He had a horrible month
of May. Yeah, he was definitely the cause of a lot of headache, to be honest.
Yeah, and that's tough. It's hard to remember a reliever's good games when he's having bad games on that level.
That is true.
But the good news is that O'Flaherty stepped into the eighth inning role, so even less pressure on Venters as the seventh inning guy. You know, and then what about, all right, here's a guy I love, Luis Avilan. I like him a lot. I like him a lot, Luis Avilan. He was a little left-hander, little tiny left-hander.
A young buck. You know, what'd you take on? What'd you take on him, on Avilan, the young guy out of Caracas, Venezuela?
Well, first of all, that's always a good thing because all Venezuelan baseball players are filthy, and I mean that in a good way for those who don't understand my jargon. I mean that they are supremely talented and have the mental edge. Luis Avilan, he was born the same year we were. That's just freaking weird. I like him a lot. He's a stocky, strong left-hander. He comes across the ball, across the body delivery. And last year, he did really well. Only threw 36 innings, but to the tune of a 2.0 ERA, struck out 8.25 per nine. And, you know, situationally was really good for the Braves. I like him, you know, to stay in that role as a matchup guy a little bit, but they also would give him the eighth inning sometimes if it was like a 5-run lead or something. And so I think, you know, relievers generally don't excel for more than a couple years. It's just the nature of the job. That's part of why Mo Rivera is so amazing. So, you know, maybe he's being groomed to kind of replace Venters if they don't think Venters can right the ship. I think Venters is better than that, but, you know, you always need more arms in the bullpen. The Braves are so good at developing them that, you know, I like Avilan. Obviously, it's a little hard when you're the third best lefty, you know, to get a ton of pitching, but it probably just means he'll be used as a matchup guy more, which likely will make his stats even better because, you know, he pitches better against lefties anyway.
One question I had specifically about the bullpen is a guy that we had for a long time, Peter Moylan, a guy that, you know, I was always a big fan of, a guy that got used a lot, you know, in his tenure with the Braves. Do you see a guy like that taking over this year? Seems that Moylan, you know, we let him go at the end of last season. He signed a minor league deal. The Dodgers. Do you see someone sort of taking in that role and being a guy that, you know, is used, you know, every other day?
Well, I don't know. I don't think the Braves necessarily think Walden can do that. But a guy that is, I think, would be almost the logical answer to that would be Corey Guerin. And he's a guy who also underwent some injury troubles throughout his career. But was also pretty good in his cameo with the Braves last year. Only threw 20 innings, but a 1.8 ERA, a 9-2 K to walk ratio, which is really excellent. And he's a guy who is very similar to Moylan. He has that underhand submarine delivery. So a guy like that, usually they say, has a rubber arm, you know, and he can pitch a lot because the weird arm slot means that he's not putting quite as much velocity on his pitches. Usually those guys can pitch more, although it seems like that would almost put more strain on your arm, but but Corey, I like him to step in and eat up some innings there. And then young Anthony Barbaro, I don't know how many pitchers the Braves intend to carry, but Barbaro is a guy who maybe him and Guerin or he and Walden would be competing for the last spot in that bullpen, or, you know, because you kind of like Christian there because he can be the long man. I don't know if any of those guys really are great at being the long man. These are more one inning guys. But, you know, so I think that might get Christian a place. So maybe it's Barbaro competing with one of those guys for the last spot.
Yeah, that's definitely interesting to see how it's going to work out, you know, just saying that. We relied on him so heavily, and, you know, Bobby even got sort of criticized for using him so much and got plagued by injuries, so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he gets replaced and, you know, how he gets used.
Yeah, and an important part to keeping relievers fresh is having your bullpen pitch a lot of innings, and, I mean, sorry, your rotation pitch a lot of innings. I don't know why.
Definitely.
Which is, you know, that's going to be a challenge this year again. I mean, Chris Medlin, like you're saying, he's going to not only have to be good, but he's going to have to go deep. And Mike Minor started doing that a little bit. So, you know, I think they have a chance maybe to do a little better, and it only makes the relievers more effective when they're not having to put out fires, but just come in and slam the door.
There it is. You know, good thoughts coming in the 2013 season. We're undefeated right now.
Top of the NL East alphabetically.
Hopefully keep it that way.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about the position players. Let's talk about the lineup. Let's talk about the defensive linemen. Let's talk about the skill position players. So on the Braves, I'm very excited about their young crop of skill position players.
I love the skill guys.
So like I said, skill position guys are the guys that occupy the most rigorous defensive positions. And on some teams, you might include the second baseman, but on this particular team, it's obvious that you would never. So the most demanding defensive positions go in this order, according to me. Catcher, shortstop, and then the outfield. A lot of people say third base, which is true, but the Braves don't have a true skill position player at third base. So we're going to talk about catcher, shortstop, and the outfield. And the youth there is so exciting. You know, that's what GMs and managers talk about that as well. Power, or not power as in power hitting, but just strength up the middle. You want to have your core players, your up-the-middle players be talented. And the Braves, they have three outfielders. I bet all of those guys could play center if they had to.
The skills that you need for that position, I could definitely see that.
They would be great. Justin and Jason are better suited to corners because they are big, lumbering guys to a certain extent just because they're so muscle-bound. But they can move. Good God, they can move. Hayward and Upton have won the last 2 years of the Fielding Bible's Best Right Fielder Award. I mean, you know, Upton and left is just unfair. But strength up the middle, I'm really excited for Mr. Andy Simmons. He is coming into the year as the starter. He's healthy. He has, you know, his defense has proved him worthy of the big leagues. And everybody who knows baseball will tell you that. So all he has to focus on is his hitting, and that's still a big thing. But, you know, it must make him feel good knowing that his defense is highly regarded. He had some success with the stick, and if he can hit it all, it's such a big bonus to his team.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about, you know, how he got injured sort of at an opportune time last year. We're making that playoff push. But it came back, you know, later in the season, you know, near that last sort of playing game, the one game playoff. And you know, he did some things, you know, in his return that I feel like, you know, he wasn't quite there yet. He hadn't got that rhythm back. But I think that with a full off season of him being healthy and being able to, you know, sort of start the season off in the groove, he's going to be dangerous. Like you said, I think he's gonna be a really good player coming up this year.
Yeah, I'm so excited. And another guy I'm excited about before we get to the Bash Bros roaming the grassy part is Christian Betancourt, or Christian. I don't know how you pronounce his first name. But this dude, he's in a similar place as Simmons, except that his offense is pretty mediocre at this point. But he's being touted as possibly the best defensive catcher in all of the minor leagues. He is a true athlete back there. I love Brian McCann, but Betancourt is a true athlete. He moves quickly to block balls. He's cat-like, covering pitches in the dirt. He's got a cannon, an absolute cannon for an arm, and a really quick release. This guy, as a defensive catcher, is the total package. And so, again, like Simmons, he plays a premium defensive position. He already has major league worth if he can't hit a lick. So any hitting that he does is just gravy. And if he can just figure out how to be like a 280 hitter with a tiny bit of power, he's like a 4 or 5 win player, and he's going to be a very, very exciting major leaguer.
Wow. So, Asa, do you see him getting you know, starts, you know, when McCann gets rest, you know, every fifth day that, you know, he gets off. Do you see him starting those games?
In my opinion, he needs more time in the minors to see the sitting. He really does, but McCann's missing the first month of the season.
Wow.
Or maybe not that much, but close to that much. And Gerald Laird, ugh, I wish we'd dropped David Ross. I mean, maybe Gerald will prove me wrong, but Gerald Laird is not exactly the catcher you want to be running out there, and he will be for a month, which you can swallow that for a month. You definitely can. But, I mean, Christian's invited to spring training, obviously. If he balls out in spring training, who knows? Who knows? Freddie might just give him the job and you know, might say, okay, we're going to keep you up for a month, see how you do. If you're balling, you know, maybe we keep you up. If you're not, when McCann comes back, maybe we send you down. I don't know if it makes more sense just to start a guy in the minors, just to not mess with his head. But Freddie might be compelled, you know? I mean, what if, you know, it'd be rare to see someone's hitting turn around that quickly. But if he showed flashes, you know, that could be a consideration he might have. Still a young kid. Still a young kid and a guy the Braves are excited about. And the Braves typically are good about not rushing guys. You know, they typically are careful and they make, you know, and it's, you know, McCann came out quickly. Andrew Jones did. Freddie Freeman did. Jason Hayward, they just know when they're ready. They rush the right guys, you know. They don't rush the wrong guys.
That's true. That's true. I think that's one thing that we've sort of gotten a reputation for over the years is knowing, you know, how to bring guys along and sort of ease them into the system. So, and it sounds like you want to talk about the Bash Bros in the outfield, obviously, you know, with the addition of BJ and Justin Upton, along with the staple Jason Hayward in the outfield. Any thoughts on that besides that, you know, it's on paper and awesome, awesome outfield.
Yeah, here's my thoughts. First, I mean, I'm a little crushed. I already said this on the air, so I don't have to get into this whole Schlemiel thing again. But I'm, you know, my heart is broken to not have Martin Prado. It really is. But what this does is the upside of this team, it just goes way higher. Just higher. Definitely higher. And I mean, Justin Upton, what I see, and this is me being optimistic, sure. What I see is a kid, you know, who for most of his life, he was trying to outperform his big brother. For most of his life, I'm sure BJ was the one who, you know, he was junior. He was Boss Man Junior. He was his dad's junior. Justin was the little bro trying to keep up. And they both got picked first overall, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
And obviously, Justin, as his body matured and people started thinking, oh, shit, maybe this is going to be the good Upton or the better Upton, you know, he probably started feeling a little bit of satisfaction, feeling like he, you know, kind of had risen to the status of his big brother, you know, after years of being the little bro. And he went to Arizona's top pick to a franchise that, while they did win that one World Series, is, you know, it doesn't exactly have a legacy of success. And he probably thought he was shit. And he should have. He was the first overall pick. They probably treated him like he was the shit. Because he was. He was, you know, when you're the number one pick for a team, you know, that's not a legendary team that hasn't been balling, you know, you can easily be billed as the franchise savior, you know, by a couple overeager, trigger-happy newsmen, and you know, that's easy for that to get blown out of proportion. And the whole attitude down in Arizona, they want players who, you know, bust their butt and, like, you know, want get their jersey dirty and do all those, you know, gritty baseball type. And that's all well and good, and I think they got their man with Prado because he's absolutely that, you know, that committed to the game and that just much of a hustler. But I think that's a bad criteria to judge a player on. And we see it all the time. Players change a scenario. They go to a different city. They play for a different team. They, you know, play with different players. And things change a little bit. And the thing is, he's shown what he can do. It's not that the Braves aren't expecting him to make some leap. All he has to do is be consistent, and that's still a, you know, a lot to do, but it's not as if he's trying to invent some skill set he doesn't have. He has proven it. 2 years ago, he was number three in the MVP voting and could have been higher. I mean, the dude has been there. They just need him to done that all the time. And I'm really thrilled. And I don't see any downside. I only see upside to having the two brothers on the same team. You know, like, how could it be bad? They push each other, you know, maybe they get competitive. Maybe the team kind of has a bit of an identity in the post Chipper era, which maybe they're looking for, you know, the post Bobby Cox, post Chipper Jones era. I'm excited. And at times it can seem like those two bros plus Hayward, they're like the most nonchalant superstars of all time, kind of. You know, they're all very low key.
Yeah.
Sometimes it worries me a little because I think we will miss Prado's energy, but if they can figure out the chemistry and the team can figure out that whole thing, which I don't, you know, they're professionals, they're grown men, they know how to do that. I think they could have something special.
Yeah, no, definitely. So we talk about that too. Like, you know, we see the upside. I think that's also a good point. Cause, you know, what are the chances that both of those guys are going to be slumping at the same time? You know, and I feel like if you have someone, you know, family member, a brother especially on the team, you know, while you're hurting, while you're not doing so great, you know, to help you out and sort of get your mind right, that's going to be very helpful. You know, for our team dynamic moving forward. So, like you said, you know, really excited about that.
Yeah. I guess the only thing I could see being bad is if they both were complete opposites, like, through the first half. Like, if one was incredible in the first half and one was sucking, like, a little hard, you know?
that would be tough. You're right.
But I think a big thing for Justin, too, and like I was saying, I did that whole build-up talking about his life and how I interpret it, which might be way off base, but he's one of the guys now. This is a fairly young team if you actually look at it, but they've bonded a bit and, you know, they've had some success together. They know what it takes and they very much had a lineup that kind of went back and forth in carrying the team the last few years and was never consistent and would always have different guys stepping up. But Justin's just one of the guys now and he might be the three hitter, but you know, he's not even the high money man on the team. There's other first round picks. So I'm excited. I'm excited for BJ too. You know, we already talked about him, but coming out of Tampa Bay, I mean, that's a tough place to play, man. You got no fans coming to your game. You play in a big, ugly, friggin' Pringle can of a stadium and you're in Tampa. You live in Florida. So it's like 0-3. And, you know, I think they'll be excited to enjoy Atlanta, Georgia. It's a nice city to live in. Some home cooking, man. You play very good at the Turner. At the Tan.
It is.
And they're not living together. I heard Justin on Media Day. He laughed that off very quickly. He's like, man, cool. We need some space to play it in the same city. That's enough. I'm like, yeah, it's probably true. You know, you got two major leaguers. They need their space.
That's a lot of money being able to see two people to have to live together. So I'm sure they're going to buy it.
Yeah, man, we got a carpool to save gas.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm really excited. I think Justin is going to hit three. I hope Hayward hits second. I'm thrilled. And another thing, just to touch on everybody, by the way, it's 7:04 here on the West Coast, which means it's 10:04 on the East Coast, which means
it is.
I don't know what that means, but it's 10:04. We're only 2 hours away from Valentine's Day, ladies and gentlemen, on the East Coast. It's already Valentine's Day in England. Old England. Ye olde England. They put
yes,
a key up here. What was I even saying? Oh, yeah, this is Foul Territory on Blog Talk Radio. We're sponsored by BackSportsPage.com, the lovely gentlemen and ladies over at BackSportsPage who bring you hard-hitting coverage of baseball, football, MMA, hockey, soccer, basketball, and everything in between. Also want to give a shout-out to Sidelines, sidelinesapp.com. the most exciting place to go argue with your friends about sports, win cool prizes like Carson. What can you win?
You can win that NCAA 2013. Awesome game, definitely. Had a good time playing it with the roomies. Yeah, just by commenting and voicing your opinion on sports, we are everyone can be a head coach or a GM when it comes to sports, so why not put it to good use and win some free swag?
Sure, damn right. You're damn right. And just a shout out to ourselves real quick. If you guys like the show, even if you don't, go to Blog Talk Radio or to backsportspage.com and go to Foul Territory and go to last week's episode, because on last week's episode, me and Carson had an incredible interview with a guy, Daniel Wilcox, former NFL player, Super Bowl champion. You never say former Super Bowl champion. It's like president. You're all once, always. And go listen to that interview. He came on and talked to us for about 35, 40 minutes. All sorts of awesome stories about his time in the NFL, in NFL Europe. He played with Ray Lewis. He played with Derek Brooks. He played with Ed Reed. He played with all those characters. And so go check that out, because that was one of our better moments and better interviews in Foul Territory history, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, no, definitely. It was definitely a great conversation, like you said at the end. He saw more as a great conversation. I could hopefully have him back on. You know, definitely cool to get a guy's insight who's played football at the highest level and was successful and, won a championship. So that was definitely awesome to have him on and hopefully have him on again. But definitely turn into you some great quotables.
Yeah, he's very quotable, man. He was ready. It was like I know he didn't prepare because I didn't even speak with him before we called him, but it was almost like he knew, he knew what I was asking. He had a bunch of very well thought out answers. So we all know where Daniel Wilcox might be on South Carolina's pro day. He might be with his top pupil, rooting him on and providing emotional support. He obviously talked about Ace Sanders, star wide receiver, formerly of the South Carolina Gamecocks, entering the NFL draft. And Wilcox was talking about this guy a lot, and he got me excited. Carson, you, with your stellar research skills, discovered a very nice Ace Sanders mixtape on YouTube. There's a bunch of them out there, but I think I actually watched the other ones, and you found the best one. But guys, go check him out, because every NFL team needs a guy like this. He's that John Gruden likes to talk about, the Joker on defense. This is my damn Joker on offense. In the new pass offense, you need a speedy little slot back receiver dude who you can shift around, who you can throw all over the formation, you can throw pitches to, throw reverses to, who can go down the field and catch a pass. That's what Ace Sanders is. And, very talented guy. Hopefully we can have him on.
Yeah. I think that, you said it'd be great to have him on and give him some exposure. I'll definitely be following this guy, throughout the process. We have the combine coming up in a few weeks. And then pro days, start pretty much after the combine to go all the way up until April 2nd, in Columbia, the Ivy League schools check in. So very interesting to see how things go moving forward. So I want to talk a little bit about some pro days and guys that are playing or planning on going pro and have a talented team. And I think the first one that I really want to concentrate on is Texas A&M. They have three guys that, are ranked pretty highly in the top 100 prospects in the country. The top guy they have is Luke Jockel. He's a big offensive tackle at A&M, a guy who a lot of people think could get that first overall pick, with Kansas City, sitting there at the top, not really knowing what to do. A lot of problems, all over the place. Everyone thinks quarterback might be in that spot, but a pretty weak class in terms of quarterbacks coming out this year. But Luke Jockel definitely, to see how he does in the combine and later on the pro day. And also a guy named Demontre Moore. He's a defensive outside linebacker hybrid, a guy much like a Ed Rushing type of guy, you know, like Von Miller, a guy that came out of A&M a couple years back, starting in the same system. So, you know, look for him to sort of turn some heads and you know, as we move into the sort of the combine pro day season. A guy who definitely has, you know, more size. He's 6'4", 250. He can be a traditional, you know, defensive end guy. I think he can also play in the 3-4, the outside linebacker position to be that edge rusher. So definitely look for those two guys come pro day. And also, I guess one of the players I want you guys to look at.
Let me ask you about these A&M guys real quick. Let me ask you about these A&M guys before you get to all those other guys. That size on Moore. That's right. I mean, that's Von Miller. Bump him up a couple font sizes. I'm interested in. I know you. I love the combine and these pro days, but I think you probably have studied them more vigorously and know even more than me. So I'm curious for a guy like Jokel, who's a dominant left tackle prospect. You know, that position is always very highly valued, so very good chance to go first overall. If he doesn't, like, almost certainly will go with one of the next few picks. What does he have to prove? What does a guy like him have to prove at a combine or at a pro day? Or does he not really have anything? And, you know, if so, I don't know. What does he just do it for the fun of it? Because I know some quarterbacks are like, oh, I don't want to throw.
I think it's a great question. And, you know, in the combine, they have, you know, very sort of specific drills and procedures that they do to sort of evaluate a player physically and both intellectually, you know, with the one-leg test. But guys, you know, pretty much what they do is, you know, coming straight out of college or if they leave early, they'll spend that time, you know, after the last game, after the last bowl game, up until the combine, just train specifically, you know, for these drills that they'll be asked to run through at the combine. So I think for offensive linemen, it's a big thing is the bench press, even though that really isn't a huge determinant of strength. But the bench press reps at 225 is always important, a stat that people look at in terms of the offensive line. And then also, I would be interested to see how he does some of the lateral movement drills, sort of the L drill, cone drill. I know that the 40-yard dash for offensive linemen, you know, you're very rarely going to run 40 yards straight ahead of you full speed in the game.
Right.
And if you do, it's not going to be relevant to the play.
Or it's going to be an awesome receiving play.
Yeah, seriously. But it's you know, just the lateral movement drills, sort of see how he moves side to side. And, you know, when you get him in the phone booth, how he can move sort of in a tight, compact area, looking, you know, at his footwork and sort of the way he just, you know, bursts off the ball and can move to his left and to his right. So definitely those things are taken to a high account, you know, at the combine and, you know, later on the pro day. So okay. I look forward to him, you know, make some strides in the off season, I guess. And then, you know, the other pro day I want to look at or another prospect in general is just, you know, a young Geno Smith. I think he could establish himself. Too many standouts. You know, looking at the end of last year, you thought that, you know, Matt Barkley would just, you know, tear it up this year, possibly win a Heisman, be the first overall pick. Definitely the field of talent was open for him to do that this year. However, it doesn't look like he'll get drafted in the first round just based on his performance, A, and then B, the shoulder injury he suffered, you know, in the last game of the season that kept him out of the finale and in the bowl game. So, look for Geno Smith because, you know, I'm sure he'll make that decision pretty soon whether he will throw or not sort of at the combine. And at the combine, it's always a big deal if you throw because you're throwing with the prospects. You don't know these guys. You sort of just get acquainted with them, you know, at the combine and sort of in a vacuum. Whereas a pro day, you know, you have, you know, you run the drills. You're in charge of what you do and what you don't do. And you run with guys that you're familiar with, guys on your team that you have built a rapport with and practice with, play with. So it'll be interesting to see if he decides to throw at the combine. A lot of quarterbacks have chosen to do so. You know, Cam Newton did so sort of against the advice of a lot of people. Look for him to sort of take that next step. going to the combine, and then, you know, if he decides to throw at his pro day. Oh, excuse me, if he decides to throw at the combine or later on his pro day.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Geno, man. When I watched him this year, I thought, you know, that guy could be a pro for sure. You know, and why not throw? I mean, if you're confident in your ability, you don't have anything to hide. You're showing off. You know, you're showing people what you've got. So why not? So we're talking about Texas A&M is Carson's most exciting pro day. Then he wants to go to West Virginia to take in the quarterback marquee performance. So what would be your third pro day that you would visit with all your mileage?
It's one of the third pro day is just sort of a gimme, you know, not only just for my own personal pleasure, but just in terms of the quality that this team has going into the draft this year. And that would just be UGA. You know, the skills that they have on defense with, you know, Jarvis Jones, Alec Ogletree, Jonathan Jenkins, Bakari Rambo, Kwame Gaithers, all guys projected to be drafted. You know, I feel like Alec Ogletree is supposed to be the first inside linebacker taken. Jarvis Jones may well be the first outside linebacker, edge rusher taken. Bakari Rambo, definitely a solid guy, you know, at that safety position. So just a lot of talent to be on display. And it's going to hurt Georgia moving forward next year 100%. But, you know, great to see those guys and see them move around and, you know, sort of in a controlled area, controlled setting. All those guys will be at the combine. But, you know, the pro day would be a good chance to watch them all together.
Yeah, is I heard buzz that, or, you know, just speculation that big old John Jenkins might be a first-round pick as well. You think that is going to happen?
Yeah, I mean, AC, you definitely look at, when you look at rankings, players, regardless of position, sort of defensive tackles sort of don't get the merit that they deserve or sort of don't have the importance that they have on an actual team. But, yeah, I could definitely see him you know, going first round, especially the things, you know with the combine ahead of him, because a guy like Don Terry Poe, a guy that came out of nowhere to become, you know, a first round pick, got pretty high because of the numbers he was able to put up in the combine and the way he was ready to, he was able to sort of wow scouts. Jonathan Jenkins has been highly productive at Georgia in the 3-4 scheme. So, you know, it should be, you know, it's very feasible. He could go in the first round depending on, you know, teams need sort of, you know, a big interior lineman, but, you know, he can only go up from here, and he has been proven that the combine can help guys take that leap into becoming a first-round pick.
What about star Latulatulatulatule?
Who's this?
The defensive tackle, star Latulatulatule.
Oh, star Latulatulatule. Sorry, out of Utah, definitely. Yeah.
I have no idea how to pronounce that, but that was my best.
Definitely. That's how I imagine he was. He would say, it. You know, also a good, D-line prospect. 6'4", 320. I think he projects to be more as a 3 technique and a 4-3 defense. Whereas John Jenkins is more of a nose guy and a 3-4. You know, I think he's a great athlete. I think he's sort of more athletic than people give him credit for. So it should be interesting to see that, you know, like I said, a lot of it has to do with schematics and if teams are in need of a 4-3 guy, if he fits their scheme. But I think that he's best utilized in a 4-3, you know, whereas John Jenkins is I think, more sort of plugged in to be at nose guard in the 3-4 type defense.
Yeah. Well, you wonder if the Saints could target John Jenkins to fill the middle in their new 3-4 defense.
That is true. I'm not sure. Do they have a first-round pick this year? Is that
I think they have a first-round. It was the second round that got nabbed by Mr.
Okay. So, yeah, like you said, as you talked about last week, and teams in transition, that could definitely be a pick that could, you know, help them, you know, make that transition to a 3-4. We talked about one of the pieces that they needed was a guy that can, you know, plug up that middle. So, definitely cool thing to see, and, you know, hopefully that'll pan out.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. Those are Carson's top three pro days to attend. I hope that Disney can make all your dreams true and fly you courtesy of Virgin America, to all three destinations. And finally, to Disneyland. where you and Joe Flacco's unibrow can meet Daffy Duck. Wow, there's some. Do you have horrible commercials for Disneyland in your area of the country that uses Joe Flacco?
I have seen that. I have seen Joe's ugly mug on TV talking about he's going to.
The cheesy music. I mean, I'm glad the Ravens won it, but.
It's crazy.
You invariably hate any team that's not your team right after they win the Super Bowl, because they just won the Super Bowl. So.
Well, Sports Illustrated commercials are coming out pretty soon for the get your Ravens hoodie.
There you go. Well, we didn't have a ton of time to get to fantasy baseball today, but let's call next week the official fantasy baseball preview episode.
Dun, 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 dun. The Whirling Dervishes are coming back. Coming back.
What's up? We got to declare keepers.
Vengeance.
When are we doing that?
I guess it'll be pretty soon. I got an email last week about, fantasy baseball's back. So, pretty soon, got to dial up the commission in South America and see what he can win.
Did you make the playoffs?
Did I?
Last year.
Are you kidding me? I finished second in the league.
Oh, right. My bad.
Finished second in the league, finished first in GM of the year.
Wow. You've self-declared that like 8 or 9 times. Well, you did have a nice run there to end the season. I just want to remind you that the Warsaw Ghetto Blasters will be defending their title from last year when they raped you in the final 9-1. It was Nanking all over that bitch.
Hey, I don't want to say I knew Gio Gonzalez using steroids when I traded him mid-season, but I had my own inkling. So good luck with that, Travis Jones, as your keeper.
That's better, too. Oh, man, you're talking to that dude who set up the website and everything. God, I can't remember his name. next week we're going to get some fantasy baseball cranking up. We'll do it show by show. Maybe we'll go for different positions. For different shows. That's a novel concept, but this has been Foul Territory on Blog Talk Radio. This was your Valentine's Day episode. I hope you guys felt the love. We felt the love. Send us little hearts, switch a name on them like it was third grade. that's all I got. You wanna sign us off, Carson?
Yeah, I mean, you listened to Foul Territory. Thanks again for tuning in. Like Issa said, great show coming up next week. Get your pens, pads, or your Excel spreadsheets out if you want the fantasy tips coming from the top two owners in Long Walk to Freeman. So
there you go. And with that, we thank you.
Soulja Boy,
where'd Soulja Boy go, man? I thought he was destined for greatness.
Oh, I have no idea. I haven't heard of him in years.
Got swallowed up in the abyss of the internet. Wait, I heard he actually got a sex change. And he was one of those backup dancers in Gangnam Style. No, that's not true, Soulja Boy.
Put his dance skills to good use.
Superman.